Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network. Hello and welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for the local church. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the founder and CEO of Church Answers.
This is episode 555. Jonathan, we have been together in a studio, at a table, in conferences, in my home, and countless other places.
Yep, hotel rooms.
Hotel rooms for 555 episodes.
Apart, you've been at the beach.
I've been at the beach more lately than my days at Lifeway.
Not me.
That is for sure. And then this is 555. So, folks, stand by for 111 episodes from now. We'll have a special emphasis on 666 when we get to 111 from now.
I don't know what we're going to do there. I wonder if we skip that one.
Just go straight from 665 to 667, just like there's no 13th floor.
I hadn't thought about that one. We're getting there. It's like 2 years away. Good grief.
Oh, my goodness. This is flying.
One year away, dude.
Gosh. We do 100
a year.
That's right.
Whoa.
Okay. Well, anyway, I want to say thank you, Southeastern Seminary. I love the relationship, the partnership that we now have with you. Jonathan's going to mention in the promo that we do an MA in church revitalization in partnership with you. We have good friends like Danny Aiken and Amy Whitfield and Art Rainer. Chuck Lawless, Ryan Hutchison. So many good friends over there.
John Ewart.
Great partnership. Keith Whitfield. We can just keep going down the list.
Yeah, we know a lot of people there.
We know probably half of the faculty, maybe a third of the staff that is there. They're doing a great job, and we appreciate the partnership we have with them. But now the promo.
Yeah, Southeastern offers more than 40 degree programs, including the Master of Arts in Church Revitalization that you just mentioned. This 37-hour degree is designed to help students move established churches from flatlining to flourishing. You can learn more about this program and more by visiting their website at sebts.edu. Or tomrainer.com/MACR. That's the Master of Arts in Church Revitalization. So tomrainer.com/MACR.
Oh, love this degree. 37 hours can be done pretty quickly. Yeah. They say it's a 2-year degree, but me and you, we can get it done quicker.
Yeah.
So we'll, for those who really want to get their master's
degree, take 18 hours a semester if they'll let you.
Whoa, 18 master's hours. Wow. I don't know about that. I think I would include summer, fall, spring.
Not at Southeastern. Yeah. It's a pretty good academic school. Couldn't really roll through 18 hours in a semester.
Roll through. You just may not pass. So,
You probably could pass with like C's if that's all you did.
Okay.
Maybe.
Anyway.
They're probably not going to let you do that.
So we're going to talk about church metrics, which is the bane of some existence, and it is the joy of others. And there's probably a place in between. I have watched this thing, and we'll talk about the pendulum swinging throughout this, but I have watched this thing go to all different kinds of extremes. And I think really we just try our best to talk about it from a biblical point of view. And that's what we'll try to do.
And I know where you land on the bane or joy.
Yeah, more joy.
Just a bit.
Yeah. But
you were so into church metrics, you were keeping other churches' metrics.
That was my sinful era. I don't recommend that you do that, especially. And really, one of the greatest sins about that is I didn't have a computer.
So yeah.
I had to do it manually.
And you were signed up for the other church's newsletter.
That is really, really sad.
That's the part that really just like put it over the top for me.
But Monday was a fun day for me when the mail would come. Or maybe it was Tuesday.
That's so bad.
Are the newsletters here yet?
That's so bad.
Yes, sir. I just need one page of them. Thank you.
Golly.
Oh, that was terrible. That was just, I have no excuse for that type of sinful behavior. But let's talk about
church metrics. It's fun for podcast stories, though.
I guess so.
I've never done that.
No, I guess not.
So, all right. Number one. So we're talking about the pendulum swing. You said this. So Wyatt may be swinging too far. Too far, which way are we talking?
I think we're in the anti-number swing right now.
So we swung it too far against, and probably two decades ago, we probably went a little bit too far.
Way too far with the church growth movement. Way too far.
Now we're back the other way.
Where numbers were almost everything.
We've seen that. We've seen churches, we've even talked to pastors who said that the pastor previous to him did whatever it took to get the numbers up because that's all that was really they cared about.
And if that's all you care about, you'll end up compromising and you'll end up counting much higher. Yeah. Like you'll, every Christian will be two people because they have the Holy Spirit in them. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be, instead of one, two, it'll be two, four, six, eight. And I've seen situations, I always say I've talked to a pastor, but I guess I've always talked to a lot of pastors. I was talking to a pastor this week and he was saying, you know, the difficult thing going in my church is we have more people attending, but the numbers are down.
Huh?
The predecessor inflated the numbers. And so he just said, he can't do that. And and so they're reporting.
So the real numbers are up, but the reported numbers are down. Down,
exactly.
Because
The predecessor inflated the numbers. And I said, well, how did you do it? And they said, well, you know, someone will say how many people were in the 4K area. And they'll say, 15. He said, I'll round that up to 25. Just something like that.
Round it to 25.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, 15 rounded is 25. You know, that was totally out of the blue, but that was the example of what he did. And particularly with worship attendance. Mm-hmm. He said, don't worry about
we had 360. All right. Well, we had four.
Yeah, exactly. Or 402. You never have an even number.
Yeah.
If church.
That's whatever. Whenever I see a church report even numbers, I'm like,
yes. Yeah. For 10 consecutive years, we have been rounded at 100. But church metrics have been cyclical, and we are going through a phase now. And I can see it in the comments. I can see it not as much at Church Answers, but certainly in the blog and podcast comments and some of the other blogs where the whole idea of metrics is just not only minimized, but sometimes demonized because you don't want to be counting people. Numbers do not matter.
Yeah. And that whole discussion basically was for point number one. Emphases on church metrics have been cyclical.
Yep.
So we pretty much covered that,
yep.
Even though I didn't say it at the beginning.
Yep.
But that was that point, folks. Number two. Understanding the phenomenon through the lens of mainline denominations. So there's a difference here, I guess. Mainline?
Not a difference. It's a historical precedent. Okay. How about that? The historical precedent is this. I am old enough for almost anything, but I am old enough where I have very vivid memories of the anti-numerical movement in mainline churches. There were books written on it, like a book called Church Growth That Counts. If you want to, I think it was Robert Hudnut, but I don't remember exactly. You'll have to Google me on that or Amazon me to find out exactly who did write that. Ralph Elliott, the Broadman Genesis controversy guy, wrote a book against church numbers.
Ralph Elliott wrote Church Growth That Counts.
All right, there you go. And so,
same guy? Genesis controversy?
Same guy, Genesis controversy. Was at Midwestern probably when he wrote that. Still living, I think, today. So that was part of the mainline movement that said, since we are declining, we will declare that metrics don't count, or maybe they're even bad. And evangelical churches would say, the only reason you don't like to count is because the numbers are down.
I know some pastors like that.
Yeah. And I wonder how much of that is in evangelicalism today. Since we're down, let's say numbers don't count. In other words, change the scorecard, and it becomes more about discipleship. And so I will always ask this question, how do you know if you are making disciples? What's your point of accountability?
You got to be able to track something to know if you're doing something.
Otherwise, it becomes intuitive.
Yeah.
And you say, well, we know we're doing it because we're becoming much deeper spiritually. We're seeing all these great things happen as our church dies. And I say, yeah, it's probably not working so well there. So the mainline denomination has gone through this phase, and they minimized and demonized numbers, and now it seems to be happening in the evangelical world, and I'm wondering if it's some of the same reason behind it.
Yeah, Ralph Elliott is 94.
Wow. So he is
still alive.
Yeah.
Per the internet.
Well, source it, internet, and that everything goes well. Last time I had a bit of curiosity about Elliot, and so I looked him up a couple of weeks ago, and he was alive then.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll have to check this on the podcast recording date. So, all right. he plays a very vital role in the Southern Baptist Convention.
Yeah, if you're in our denomination or if you're part of the denomination, then you know that he really was the spark that created the fire of the conservative resurgence.
Mm-hmm.
So with his commentary on Genesis. And he had no idea that it was going to, by the way.
Oh, it was. Oh, wow. Okay.
He thought it was just another commentary. So did many of his friends.
Oh.
Wow, did it catch fire.
Yes, it did. All right. Number three, metrics and gender accountability. That kind of talks about what, or it goes back to what you were just talking about. Of how do you know if you're getting things done if you don't keep track of what you're doing?
And again, someone will say, well, it's not the numbers. Well, okay. What kind of accountability do you have? What is it that, you know, you measure, whatever you measure becomes important in the church. And if you're not measuring conversions, baptisms, professions of faith, I suspect that it's a good possibility that that won't be an emphasis in your church. If you're not worshiping, if you're not measuring worship attendance, that may not be. If you're not measuring, if you think metrics are the wrong thing to be looking, what are you doing for accountability? Mm-hmm. What are you doing to say we're on track?
Yeah, we're going to talk about four key metrics in here in just a minute that you should be tracking. But first, metrics move leaders to action. Yeah. Because if you're keeping track of the numbers and they're down, you know you need to do something. So it kind of spurs you a little bit.
Exactly. Look, there is absolutely no doubt, just like the Bible, metrics can be used for good or for evil. A census can be of God. Our census can be of Satan. Just read the book of Numbers and you'll find out that it can go either way. It depends on where the heart is and what the motive is. Metrics, though, do move leaders to action if they're watching those metrics. And I watched them in the business world. I watched them in the church world. I probably watched others in the church world a little bit too much, but I watched metrics and it did move me to action.
I mean, just take this in a personal aspect. If you don't watch your budget and watch your bank accounts at the house.
Yes.
And you just spend whatever you want. Mm-hmm. Guess what? It's going to probably wind up pretty bad for you down the road.
And what are you doing when you do? You're using metrics.
Yes.
So, you know, these
because you're just watching, you know, hey, I can't do this, or hey, we can do this because we're watching the numbers.
That's exactly
right.
And it
moves you to save, it moves you to spend, or whatever it may be.
Yeah, exactly. So, metrics moving leaders to action is a truism. Again, it can be the wrong action.
Yes.
That can be the other side where you start inflating the numbers instead of showing ethical, biblical truthfulness with the numbers.
Or moving to action for numbers' sake alone.
Yes, exactly. Now, let's talk about some of those key metrics.
Four key metrics. And these, if you've listened to Rainer on Leadership for any time, these will not be unfamiliar to you.
Yep.
First of all, worship attendance.
Yeah. By the way, as we get into these four key metrics, they're not the only metrics.
No.
They may not be the most important metrics for your church, but these are four of the most common metrics that we see again and again. And worship attendance is absolutely critical because worship attendance is the most common metric, number one, and it's the place where typically the most people are present at any one time.
And it's also one of those that, for the most part, every church has worship. I mean, I said for the most part. There's some funny online stuff, but
yes,
and for the most part, if you have a church, you have a worship service. Every church, that's apples across the board,
right?
Not apples and oranges.
And the question arose at Church Answers yesterday: should I count online metrics in my worship attendance? And we said no, put it separately.
Yes, count them differently.
Differently, don't add them to the total of one person to make them look more. Put them in a separate category. Then you get in the question, which of the metrics do you use? Do you use views? Do you use how long you watched it? And if it's anybody over 5 minutes, then it becomes a good metric.
Yeah. It depends.
Yeah. We'll leave it
pick
at that.
Pick one and be consistent with it.
That's a good point. One pastor was saying, I got really excited when I saw this is a church running 200, 250. He said, I got really excited when I saw 1,400 people had viewed the worship service, either live
on Facebook.
Yeah.
And counts 3 seconds.
Yeah. That's what he said. Then he said, I saw that the average length of time that they were there, 1:03.
Yeah.
So, you know, he said, I don't think I can really count these.
Yeah. No. Yeah. So what you'd want to do is you'd look in Facebook for some kind of analytics that, I mean, if you're doing that.
Yeah.
Look in Facebook, find your analytics for the post, find one that is exemplary of what you would consider a legitimate view, and stick with that metric.
Exactly.
So if that's a 15-minute view, if that's a they watched 50%, whatever it may be, use that, let that be your metric, and just go from there.
Well stated.
All right, number two. Or well, the second, group attendance is the next key metric.
Yeah, group attendance is critical because group attendance becomes a lead metric for giving, for conversions, for worship attendance, for ministry involvement. It is not only a lag metric, but it is a lead metric as well. The more people that you can get into groups, the more people that are participating in the group dynamics, the more discipleship that takes place in a multitude of ways.
Would you say that this is maybe the most important, or maybe the important's not the right word, but the lead metric for discipleship? Mm-hmm. That kind of the one that you, if you're going to hang your hat on any metric, this is the one?
I would. And the thing about it is, a lot of churches don't keep group attendance. I've been amazed. You know, growing up in the Baptist tradition that I did, well, I didn't. As a young adult, I was one of two denominations, Methodist and Unchurched. Those were the two that I was very
active. The Methodist church was the one you didn't go to?
Yeah, the Methodist church I didn't go to, and the Unchurched. For those of you who don't know my background, I really only became involved in church right after I got married.
Thank you, Nellie Jo.
It was a stipulation of the vows. So originally, I went to church to get her, but
she got you.
Yes.
Or something like that.
Yeah, the bride, anyway. The bride of Christ became important to me, as well as the bride. Group attendance is a great lead metric, and if you're not measuring that, pastors and other leaders in the church, I think you're missing out on something, because it can portray future and present discipleship.
Yeah. And again, just be consistent on what you measure, because my church, we have midweek discipleship classes. Mm-hmm. We have Sunday morning discipleship classes.
There's redundancy.
So there are some redundancies, but if you want to measure individuals on a week-by-week basis, whatever, however you measure it, just be consistent.
Watch those numbers.
If you want to just measure what we have at my church, Sunday school, or if you just like what you have, home groups, just be consistent in what you're measuring week to week.
Please, mine meets on the site.
Yours is on site, yes.
Yes,
the one Sunday school class at the Church of Spring Hill.
No, it's actually 4 now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're meeting other times, not Sunday morning.
Yours is at 8:33.
8:33, yeah. Yeah, we love my community group.
Yes.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, David.
All right.
Thank you, Paul.
I'm just glad you're back, you know, at the Church of Spring Hill. You'd missed like 6 weeks in a row or something like that.
But I was at Bradenton.
Yeah, I know. You were at the other church. You were snowbirding.
I was at the Rainer Church, number 2.
Yes. All right, number 7, which is the third key metric here, total and general giving. So explain the difference in there.
Total giving is every dollar that comes in for anything. Period.
Designated, undesignated, whatever, just special
budget,
offerings, whatever.
It's everything that comes in. General giving, and I'll make an exception to that, Jonathan. If there is reimbursed, I don't count that in total giving. So somebody's paying for a trip.
Oh, yeah. My kid's going to summer camp. And
paying for the cost of something.
No.
But some churches do count that. But that's paying for a service.
Yeah. No.
That's different. But otherwise, total giving is everything. General giving means that it goes to the budgeted items without restriction.
Yeah. So that would be, in most church vernacular, undesignated.
Undesignated giving. Although I'm finding more and more churches asking, what does undesignated mean? And when I tell them it's not designated, they say, oh. That's why we're here at Church Answers. Thank you.
We have a dictionary just like you.
So again, metrics of giving can be both lag and lead metrics. It can lead, point towards something. Mm-hmm. Lag, it can tell you something that has happened.
Good. Well, we have a podcast on that, how giving is it a lead or a lag for attendance? Like if you're...
It's a lead.
Okay.
So if giving... All things being equal, if giving is going up, attendance will usually go up.
And if your giving starts slacking off,
then attendance will usually follow. Because
there's a podcast on that. I need to find that one and link to that.
But I still will say that giving can be either one. Mm-hmm. And if you have a lot of young people coming into the church, it changes things dramatically.
Yeah. Because we talked about that, because if you have a lot of new conversions, giving usually lags that.
Yes.
Because
they take a while to become good stewards of their
faith. Yeah, they don't. Yeah, they're new to the faith. They're new to stewardship and discipleship and different things like that. So,
yep.
And then finally, probably, you know, we talked about groups being important. I think the most eternally important key metric is conversions.
Churches count people who have become followers of Christ with a number of labels. If you're a Baptist, it's usually baptisms. If you're, I think, Wesleyans or profession of faith. Some denominations are conversions, but my simple definition of this, though it doesn't sound that simple now that I think of it, is someone who wasn't a follower of Christ has now become a follower of Christ and is active in the church.
That's a conversion.
Yes. That is a conversion. I do not count in, for example, you go to Uganda and 5,000 people become followers of Christ. That is wonderful, but that's not a conversion in the local church.
No.
That's a conversion in Uganda. And
that's a missionary thing.
Yes, exactly. So if you're not watching this, conversions, you are probably missing out on something.
Well, you put a caveat on your definition there at the end, who become active in the local church.
Yeah, I did.
So walk me through that. And, you know, it's the summer right now. Church is having VBS. My wife had, you know, a couple dozen kids come to Christ. Some of them church members, some of them not. How do you measure those?
My way of doing so is to count those who became active in our church, okay, because you're hoping that the other church will be counting those who became followers of Christ in their church.
And that's one of the reasons I think in the Baptist world we do that on baptisms.
Yes.
Because that showing that you're becoming active in the local church, not just I made a profession of faith, I prayed a prayer, whatever, walked an aisle.
Right.
Like, you know, in the past maybe.
Yes, exactly. Okay. So it's not perfect, but I would tend to say it's those who are now active in the local church.
Okay. I like that. I think that's a fair and accurate measurement. Again, be consistent with it.
Yes.
Number nine, the trend today is to respond to metrics too late.
Yeah. Back in episode 554, we talked about interventionists. And many times you don't call a church consultant or somebody to help you or to do it yourself in God's power to change things. The metrics have gone too far, and then it's too late to do anything.
And that's why swinging the metrics, being anti-metric, swinging the pendulum too far hurts, because then you don't know you need the intervention.
Watch it. Church closures are represented by a lot of churches that weren't watching the metrics.
Mm-hmm. Well, or they're watching the wrong metrics, because we've talked about it before. Too many churches die with money in the bank.
Okay, so they think they have money.
Well, we have money. Oh, we're good. We have plenty of money in the bank.
Watch worship attendance and see what happens there.
There's 12 people every week, but we have money in the bank.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right.
Well, we thank you, Vander Blumen, our long-standing sponsor who is still with us today.
Long-standing and outstanding.
Yeah.
Vander Blumen has 12 Vander Blumen differences that allow them to serve their clients better than anyone else. One of those is that theology matters. Vander Blumen's staff has more seminary and theological experience than any other search firm, with more than 250 collective years of church leadership experience. To learn more about all 12 of Vander Blumen's differences, visit vanderdifference.com. That's going to do it for today's episode of Rainer on Leadership. Any final closing thoughts, Dr. Rainer?
I think we'll continue to pursue this at some other point, because this is a definitive trend to watch, and it's the metric movement, or for today, it is more the anti-metric movement. We'll continue to watch it, and we'll see the implications of it as we move forward.
What you believe about your purpose and value affects almost every area of your life. This is the premise behind the new film Overcomer in theaters August 23rd. It's the latest from the Kendrick brothers, makers of Courageous, War Room, and many other movies. This movie has inspired the creation of several resources. For small groups, there's the Overcomer Bible Study. For individuals, there's a book called Define, and both are based upon the powerful insights from the book of Ephesians. You can find out more about these resources and the movie at lifeway.com/overcomer. Thanks again for joining us here today on Rainer on Leadership, a member of the Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and in your favorite podcasting app. And join us online at tomrainer.com, where we are growing healthy churches together.